together. The automaker borrowed more than $23 billion in 2006 to help turn itself around. That loan was secured by company assets. Analysts believe that that loan helped Ford to be in a better position in this recession than its rivals. In his comments, Ford said he wants the government to consider incentives for consumers to buy hybrid vehicles, as he expects gas prices will rise again when the economy improves. For the latest news and analysis, log on to IRNnews.com.
11 years ago, when my uncle started the Patriot Trading Group, gas was 75 cents a gallon. We were running an alleged budget surplus, and the total national debt was $5 trillion, and the government was forecasting the debt would be eliminated by 2010. And I thought my uncle was a wacko with tinfoil on his head. Well, I owned tech stocks certain to become a millionaire before the millennium rolled over. Since then, the debt has doubled, jobs are heading overseas, and 100,000 people have joined Eric with tinfoil on their heads. I'm Joe Jaquin, Vice President for the Patriot Trading Group, and as gold and silver have doubled and even tripled during the first 11 years, the issues facing this country over the next 11 years look far worse. Call the Patriot Trading Group at 800-951-0592. We offer all forms of gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, shipped and delivered at the most competitive prices in the country. Call us, 800-951-0592, or check out our website at allamericangold.com. And remember, you don't need to have tinfoil to own gold and silver.
What would your life be like if you woke up each morning with new vitality, feeling better than you have in years, and you noticed a difference in your sleeping patterns, blood sugar levels, and had a sense of well-being overall? There's something that is changing thousands of people's lives, and you could be one of them. It's called Heart and Body Extract. Sharon Harris, co-creator of Heart and Body Extract, talks about the positive effects of Heart and Body Extract.
What happens with the formula Heart and Body Extract is it's giving the body the necessary vitamins, minerals, amino acids, enzymes, and phytonutrients so the body will heal itself. And yes, the body does have the ability to balance blood pressure, balance cholesterol, clean and unclog the arteries. It can also work on balancing the circulation for diabetics. So the body is an amazing thing. It simply needs some help so it has the tools to heal itself.
Heart and Body Extract gets results. To order your two-month supply, call now, toll-free at 866-295-5305. Order online at hbextract.com.
I just stand here at the American Freedom Network, and my guest this morning is my good friend William Federer. And William, of course, has run for Congress a number of times. He's a writer. He's done some great work on a number of different topics. We carry his book, America's God and Country, that sold well over 100,000 copies, maybe more than that. Excellent book, going into the Christian background of America and the people who created this country. But, William, what are we going to talk about this morning?
Well, Dr. Stan, great to be with you. I thought with the situation in Israel, that might be interesting to talk about the history of that particular conflict, and then, of course, the history of the Islamic expansion over the last 1,400 years and how that sort of repeats itself and plays into what we're seeing today.
All right, you pick up the story, and I'll just sit here and listen.
Well, I wrote a book. It's entitled What Every American Needs to Know About the Quran. It's a history of Islam and the United States, and it goes through the 1,400-year history of Islamic expansion. And I may have mentioned it before on your program, but it's worth repeating. RPM, Religious, Political, and Military. Islam is not just a religion. It is a political system and a military system. Why? Because Muhammad was not just a religion. Muhammad was also a political and a military leader. And so we get a clear indication of where they're with their agenda. One of the things I found fascinating, and I highlight it in my book, was that for 12 years, Muhammad was just a religious leader in Mecca, trying to make converts of the pagans. People forget that Mecca used to be a pagan city, had over 360 different gods, and the most popular was the moon god. And Muhammad was in there trying to make converts. Finally, after 12 years, in the year 622 AD, the pagans got tired of Muhammad and chased him out. And he fled to Medina. Medina was a Jewish city. Three Jewish tribes controlled it. They used the name Yathrib. And anyway, Muhammad tries to convert them, and the Jews say, well, you're not a prophet in the line of our prophets, and so Muhammad is sort of ostracized, and he goes to the pagans that were also living in that community, but they had no voice in the city government. And so Muhammad begins to make converts, and a couple pagan leaders resist Muhammad, and they were assassinated, and so the other pagans decided they better convert or they might die. And at this point, Muhammad began to get some political clout, and he basically became a community organizer, and he began to represent the pagan, now Muslim, community to these Jews. And so finally, he was brilliant politically. He was able to perceive that these three Jewish tribes in Medina never got along. They had generations of animosity and even fighting each other. And so Muhammad presented himself as a candidate of change. He said, look, I'm an outsider. I'm not from here. I don't have any political history of how I stand on issues and so forth. And he said that he could be objective and fair. And so these pagans went ahead and voted him into leadership and made a covenant with him. And so at this time, Muhammad actually transitioned from just being a religious leader to now he was a religious leader and a political leader. And then some of the converts to Islam back in Mecca, Muhammad's old town, they got chased out too, just like Muhammad had been chased out, and they had their homes confiscated. And so they show up in Medina, where Muhammad is their religious and political leader, and so Muhammad permits them to rob the caravans headed to Mecca in retaliation for the Meccans taking their houses. So it's a little different than Christianity. In Christianity, Jesus taught, if they take your coat, give them your shirt. In Islam, Muhammad taught, if they take your house, you take their caravan. You retaliate. And so Muhammad had 300 warriors, and they would hide amongst the rocks. And when the caravans came through on their way to Mecca, Muhammad would jump out with his men, and they would terrorize the caravan and then rob it. He actually had a whole chapter of the Quran revealed to him on how to distribute the booty that he took from these caravans. It was Surah 8, or Chapter 8. Anyway, in the year 624 A.D., so Muhammad's now been in Medina only 2 years, and he fled in 622. That's called the flight, the Hijra. That's actually year 1 in the Muslim calendar. Christians' year 1 is 1 A.D., when Jesus was born, and all the Western civilization calendars are based on that. But in Islam, 622 A.D. is their year 1. That's the year Muhammad fled from Mecca to Medina. So he fled in 622. Now we're up to the year 624. So he's been there 2 years, and it's the Battle of Badr, B-A-D-R. And so the pagans now have in Mecca, they send up 10,000 soldiers to fight Muhammad. And Muhammad is actually a brilliant strategist, and he's able to notice that these Meccans coming up to Medina, and Muhammad had dug trenches or potholes all around the city of Medina, and that actually caused the whole battle strategy of the Meccans to be useless, because you can't charge your horses and camels across a field full of potholes and trenches, because they'll break their legs. And so Muhammad then threatened some of the coalition force leaders and bribed some of the other ones, and then finally the Meccans were left, and they decided to bring their troops home. So in the year 627 A.D., the Meccans bring their troops home, and Muhammad takes this as a confirmation from Allah that his enemies have showed cowardice in front of him, and so he's supposed to also be now a military leader. And he goes off to fight in 66 battles. He leads 27 of them, and he actually uses the catapult when he attacks certain cities, like the city of Al-Ta'if. And when he was told that women and children were in the city, then his response was, they are among them. So women and children got to be killed too. So suicide bombers today say it's okay to kill innocent people to advance Islam, because Muhammad killed innocent people when he used the catapults. And so so Muhammad transitioned from just being a religious leader to also being a political leader. And then when his agenda was resisted, he became a military leader. And so that's the pattern that Muslims have used up to this day. And, you know, Caesar said, I came, I saw, I conquered. The three steps in Latin, it was vini, vidi, vici. I came, I saw, I conquered. Well, Muhammad's was, I immigrated, I increased in number, and then I eliminated. And,
all right, we'll be back in just a moment with our good friend William Federer right here at the American Peace Network.
Just a good old boy.
Hi, I'm Eric Cederstrup. For over a decade, I've been the CEO, shipping clerk, and janitor of the Patriot Trading Group. And in that time, I've made friends with tens of thousands of like-minded individuals all over this country, most like me, trying to raise a family, run a business, and make sense out of a world gone mad. I'm proud of the fact that through stock bubbles, housing bubbles, and financial chaos, our customers are prospering and doing very well. By keeping our prices fair and our service fast, we find that 80% of our customers not only reorder, but they tell their friends. Don't be fooled by hype and high pressure. Do business with a company you can trust. Call the Patriot Trading Group at 1-800-951-0592 or check out our website at allamericangold.com. You'll be treated with honesty and respect. You have my word on it. I'm Eric Cederstrom, CEO, shipping clerk, and janitor.
Taking your way, the only way they know how.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your 2-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
Well, Dr. Stan, back here at the American Freedom Network, and our guest this morning is William Federer. We're talking about Muhammad. We're talking about the background of the Muslim faith and how, of course, Muhammad started out as a religious leader, and then he became a political leader, and then he became a military leader. And military action and violence is an important part of the Muslim faith. And remember, the whole world, the word Islam means submission. You are to be submissive to the state. And, of course, the state and religion cannot be separated. That's why when the United States went into Iraq, where the Christians lived, about 10% of the population was Christian in Iraq, before we went in to liberate them. Now only about 3% of the population is Christian because we established a nation under Sharia law. Why would we establish the constitution in Iraq under Sharia law, which is the Muslim faith, and of course they do not tolerate Christians, they can kill Christians, it's perfectly all right. Why would the United States, the great liberator, the great Christian nation, go into Iraq and destroy the secular society and institute a Muslim society, knowing full well what it would mean for the Christians who live there? Could it possibly be that our leadership is really not the Christian leaders that we've been told, that George Bush was not an evangelical Christian, as he told the Christian leaders that I met with, who met with George Bush, and he insisted that he was an evangelical Christian, actually converted by Billy Graham. But I'm sure Billy Graham didn't convert him to a faith, which said the Bible was only a lot of good stories. Well, anyway, let's get back to William Federer and the story of the Muslim faith and its march through history. Go ahead, William.
Well, Dr. Stan, it's a really tremendous book that I wrote. It's called What Every American Needs to Know About the Quran, A History of Islam in the United States. And it brings up that, as you mentioned, that Islam is not just a religion, it's a political system and a military system. Now, Islam has advanced through history through these steps. And so first, Muslims would come into a country and say, we're a religion, treat us the same way that you treat other religions. And so the country, not understanding that it's also a political and military system, they give them the freedom. And so what happens next is that the Muslims begin to make converts and increase in number and have more children, because Muhammad said they could have four wives and plus as many women as they could take in battle. And so they begin to increase the number of their followers, the same way that when Muhammad went to Medina, first he came in as an immigrant saying, hey, I'm just a religion, and then he became a political leader. And so Muslims transition from just being immigrants to increasing in number and getting involved in politics. And once they begin to get involved in politics, they begin to push their Sharia law agenda, that they want to have favored status. They want to cause any other religions that criticize them to be considered hate crimes and so forth. And this is what's happened in Europe, unfortunately. And so then when finally the non-Muslim community says, wait a second, we don't want to turn into a Muslim Sharia law state, and they begin to resist it, that's when the Muslims get violent. And why do they get violent? Because Muhammad got violent when his agenda was resisted. And so they like to follow in the example of Muhammad. His life is actually called the Sunnah, the way. It's the example. That's where we get the name Sunni. It's the way. And so Muhammad's life, he was the perfect Muslim. And so all Muslims try to imitate him, and they imitate him as a religious leader, and then they transition into becoming involved in politics to push a political agenda. And then when that agenda is resisted, they become violent and militaristic, because Muhammad was also a military leader, and Muhammad fought in 66 battles and so forth. Now, Islam has advanced through history when the West is in disagreement. And it's always interesting how Muslims play political sides against each other. So one of the first countries they took over was Egypt. Now, Egypt had been Coptic Christian for 700 years. And Coptic is just the Arabic word for Egyptian. And the situation was that the Byzantine Christians from Constantinople had been going down with their military and armies and persecuting the Coptic Christians. And so these Coptic Christians wanted some relief from this persecution. And lo and behold, these Muslims come from Arabia, and they're like, and they say that they will help drive out the Byzantine Christians. Well, these Coptic Christians were so desperate, they said, sure, come in and help us. So the Muslims came in, drove out the Byzantine Christians, and then they said, guess what? We're staying and we're taking control. And they ended up in the year 1000, one of the sultans decided that he was going to outlaw the Egyptian language. And so he actually made it a crime where if you spoke the Egyptian language rather than the superior divine Arabic language, they said that the Quran was dictated to Muhammad in Arabic, so that is the divine language. And so they want to get rid of other languages. And so they decided to, this sultan decided to have the tongues cut out of anybody that spoke Egyptian rather than Arabic. And he had soldiers hiding around the homes of the Egyptian, and if somebody was overheard having their family members speaking Egyptian, they would kick the doors in, go in, and cut out the tongues of everybody in the family, so that the Egyptian language was actually made obsolete. The only place where it has survived is in some of the Coptic Egyptian Christian monasteries way up in the mountains, and it's just used in religious Orthodox services, sort of like, you know, the Orthodox Latin in the West. And so we see this where in history that one side will play the other against. So, for example, in Spain, there was a leader who felt like he was not getting a fair situation, and so he actually went across the Strait of Gibraltar and helped organize these Muslims to come across to help him defeat some of these other Spaniards. And of course, when the Muslims came across, they said, this is so easy, we're just going to take over. The same thing happened with the Byzantine Empire, where Constantinople it was sort of two different divisions in this situation. Constantinople was the capital of the world for 1,000 years. Constantine had moved the capital of Rome there. And they were Byzantine Christian, Eastern Orthodox Christian. And when the Muslims began to invade, they cried out to the Latin Roman Catholic West for help. The West sent help, and they had the First Crusade, the Second Crusade, the Third Crusade. But the Fourth Crusade, it was led by this Doge of Venice who decided to sack Constantinople. Believe it or not, instead of coming to help him, he just raped and pillaged with all of his soldiers. And so the Fourth Crusade was one of the most terrible travesties because the Byzantines let down all their defenses, let their big chain that went across the Great Horn, their port there, and let all these Venetian ships come into their harbor, and they open the gates thinking, oh, they're here to help, and they come in and rob, steal, pillage, and just take, you know, 1,000 years worth of wealth that they had saved up. And that's when the Venetians became very, very wealthy at the expense of the Constantinople. And so after that, there was this tremendous suspicion and hatred and animosity between the Byzantine Christians and the Latin Roman Catholic West Christians. And so in 1453, when the Muslims were invading, there was a segment of the Byzantines that said, look, maybe if we reconcile with the Latin Roman Catholic West, they'll send another crusade to help us. And then there was another group that said, no, we can't do that, or God will judge us for making an agreement that we don't think is the right one. And so there was this religious division. And then there was political division in Constantinople that helped the Muslims advance. And it reminds me today of the Democrat-Republican situation in America, but even then globally as well. But there were the emperors, which traced their emperorship all the way back to the Roman emperors, but the emperor was John Palaiologos. What's a funny last name, a Greek last name, Palaiologos. Well, John Palaiologos died suddenly, and he had two sons, Demetrius and Constantine the 11th. And these two sons were sort of vying over who was going to be the emperor. Little did they know they would be the last emperor. Well, Constantine the 11th won. And so Demetrius felt like he was a spoiled brat guy and thought that he deserved to be the emperor. And so he actually goes across the Bosporus, which is this 19-mile stretch of river that connects the Black Sea to the Mediterranean, and it's sort of the division between the Eastern Europe and Western Europe. But Demetrius goes across the Bosporus, organizes some of these Muslim hordes to cross the Bosporus, and he brings them up to the gates of Constantinople, this huge city, and lays siege to it, trying to pressure his brother into acknowledging his claim to royalty. And, of course, these Muslim hordes say to themselves, well, we can do this besieging of Constantinople without Demetrius. But here, the West was so myopic. They were so thinking of their own little, sort of like Jerusalem, you know, when the Romans were attacking and Jerusalem divided itself into three different groups and they were warring amongst themselves inside of the walls and they didn't really make up until the Romans were right outside, and at that point it was too late. And so here in the West, we see that the different political groups are, you know, thinking, well, who can get control of America's politics and this and that, and they don't realize that one of them sees you know, working together with the CARE, the Center for American Islamic Relations and so forth, as helping their agenda. They don't realize that this group has its own political agenda. Now, this also has happened during the Reformation time, when in Europe the Protestant Reformation began. And actually, some of the Protestant countries wanted the Muslims of Turkey to attack Spain because they thought King Charles V, the Catholic monarch of Spain, was persecuting them during the Reformation. And then even France made a covenant, a treaty with the Ottoman Muslims against Britain. And that was when Napoleon was going to be sent over to the Ottoman Empire to upgrade their artillery. And Napoleon refused. He said, I don't want to train somebody else to fight and get the glory. I want to fight and get the glory. So he resigned the French military And some people got him back in, and that's when he fought and ended up capturing the Pope and capturing Italy and then becoming the great military leader he was. But here, Napoleon almost went over with this treaty with France, with the Ottomans. And so throughout history, when the West was in disagreement, one of the groups in the West would sort of party with the Muslims against the other group in the West, not realizing that this Muslim group was like Muhammad in Mecca, and he was playing these different religious, these different Jewish tribes against each other, or the different, groups in Medina against each other, so he could advance Islam. And so that's what we've seen. Now, the specific, and again, all this stuff is in my book, and the title of my book is What Every American Needs to Know About the Quran, History of Islam in the United States. But the Muslim world has only been stopped historically through humiliating military defeats. And sort of like a sports team, the fans are really proud of their team, and the only way you can get those fans to lose their enthusiasm and become passive and peaceful is when their team loses for a bunch of seasons in a row, and then it's still their alma mater, it's still their team, they still want it to win, but it's so embarrassing that they're just sort of quiet about being a fan. But when their team gets on a roll and starts winning, that's when they, and what you have to understand, they have this team concept with their religion, because Muhammad, again, was a political leader and a military leader. So it has that aspect, that political team, my group. It's not the just the internal type of religion that Christianity and others are. So the situation that we see is that the Muslim movement was always stopped through terrible military defeats, the Battle of Lepanto, the Battle of Tours, the Battle of Vienna. But after World War I, the Muslim world, the Ottoman Empire, had been defeated. And Britain took a part of the Ottoman Empire. They took Palestine and Iraq. France took a part of the Ottoman Empire, Lebanon and Syria. They wanted America to take a part of the Ottoman Empire, Armenia, but we had a Republican-controlled Senate that did not want to get involved in a civil war in a Muslim country on the other side of the world, so they said no. And unfortunately, 1.5 million Armenian Christians were massacred between 1915 and 1922. But after World War I, the Ottoman Empire, the Muslim world, saw itself as defeated. And that's when they became peaceful.
Hang on there, William. We'll be back in just a moment here at the American Freedom Network.
An emergency preparedness plan for your home, car, school, and office is a must. Knowing how to store water safely, survive extreme temperature changes, provide reliable shelter, first aid, and sanitation is critical. Knowing where to get the best lights, radios, and other supplies is easy. Ferris Survival, located at 3366 South Broadway, is a professional, reputable, full-service business providing realistic preparedness supplies at affordable prices. Stop by, go online, or call 303-781-0343, 866-781-0343. Sick of playing the guessing game with your vitamins? Tired of paying hundreds or even thousands of dollars for supplements that may or may not work? If you're a professional athlete or just looking for nutritional peace of mind, look no more, because you've found Bio Superfood, the next generation in supplementation. 100% natural Bio Superfood packs all your essential proteins, vitamins, minerals, antioxidants, enzymes, and many of nature's special forces you need for optimum health. Call BioAge at 877-288-9116, 877-288-9116.
And of his fullness we have all received, and grace for grace. For the law was given through Moses, but grace and truth came through Yeshua HaMashiach, Jesus the Christ. No one has seen God at any time. The only begotten Son, who is in the bosom of the Father, he has declared him. The Gospel of John, chapter 1, verse 16. Worship and Warfare, Holy Places and In His Hands. 3 praise and worship CDs now available through Voice of Many Waters Ministry. Call 1-800-205-6245 or check it out on the web, www.voiceofmanywaters.org. Each CD is $15 plus $3.50 shipping and handling. Call 1-800-205-6245 or www.voiceofmanywaters.org.
11 years ago, when my uncle started the Patriot Trading Group, gas was 75 cents a gallon. We were running an alleged budget surplus, and the total national debt was $5 trillion, and the government was forecasting the debt would be eliminated by 2010. And I thought my uncle was a wacko with tinfoil on his head. Well, I own tech stocks certain to become a millionaire before the millennium rolled over. Since then, the debt has doubled, jobs are heading overseas, and 100,000 people have joined Eric with tinfoil on their heads. I'm Joe Jaquin, Vice President for the Patriot Trading Group, and as gold and silver have doubled and even tripled during the first 11 years, the issues facing this country over the next 11 years look far worse. Call the Patriot Trading Group at 800-951-0592. We offer all forms of gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, shipped and delivered at the most competitive prices in the country. Call us, 800-951-0592, or check out our website at allamericangold.com. And remember, you don't need to have tinfoil to own gold and silver.
Well, Dr. Stan, back here at the American Freedom Network, our guest this morning, William Federer. And before we go on, William, would you like to get your web page out and any other information you'd like?
Oh, thanks, Dr. Stan. My website is AmericanMinute.com, AmericanMinute.com. And I have a toll-free telephone number. It's 1-888-USA-WORD. That's 1-888-USA-WORD. And the title of my book that we've been talking about is What Every American Needs to Know About the Quran, Q-U-R-A-N, Quran. And it's a history of Islam in the United States. Of course, it's available on Amazon.com, too. What Every American Needs to Know About the Quran. And one of the things I thought interesting is the current situation and when it changed. And it began to change in 1938. And didn't know if you want me to go ahead and pick up there, Dr.
Sure, go right ahead.
Well, after World War I, the Ottoman Empire viewed itself as defeated. The West was inventing automobiles and airplanes and satellites and telephones. And Saudi Arabia, for example, was still living in tents with 130-degree heat and smelly camels, and this backwards Wahhabi Islam where they would cut off arms and legs and bury women up to their waist and stoning them to death if they were found, you know, talking to a man who was not their husband and or not wearing their burqa. And, you know, it's like snake handlers. I mean, this was like really backwoods, back sands and desert religion. And but in 1938, something happened. Oil was discovered in Saudi Arabia, and the West began to pump billions of dollars into the most violent of Muslim countries. And so within one generation, Saudi Arabia went from the poorest Muslim country to the richest Muslim country. And so all the rest of these Muslim countries that had been trying to westernize themselves, you know, they were sending their kids to Western schools, they were dressing with suits and ties and getting rid of the burqas, and, you know, like the Shah of Iran. He was so pro-West, pro-American, he was more pro-American than Israel was. Unfortunately, in that situation, Jimmy Carter was the president, and his national security advisor, Zbigniew Brzezinski, thought that if Iran could become violent Muslim, it would be a thorn in the side of Russia and help bring the USSR down. And so Jimmy Carter intentionally, basically, pulled the rug out from underneath the Shah, let Iran go from being pro-American to being radical Muslim. And yes, indeed, it was a thorn in the side of the USSR, and yes, it did help bring the USSR down, but unfortunately, we've jumped from the frying pan into the fire, and we've created a monster. We let the genie out of the bottle. But anyway...
But I think it's such an important point for our listeners to understand that it was American foreign policy that brought the radical mullahs to power in Iran. Until the American people understand that our foreign policy is consistently anti-American, doing everything it can to disrupt, you know, the future of this nation, why would we want to bring the radical Muslims to power? Oh, well, we wanted to be a thorn in the side of the Russians. But is there a possibility there was another agenda, perhaps even a long-term spiritual agenda behind the reformation, reconstitution of ancient Persia? So you go right ahead with the story.
Well, and you're bringing up really good points there, Dr. Stan. But after Iran fell and was taken over by the Ayatollah, who is a Shiite. 10% of Muslims are Shiite, 90% are Sunni. Most of the Shiites live in Iran, which is the new name for Persia. And the Shiites are very hierarchical, and the Ayatollah is like their pope, but even more so. Again, when you understand RPM, religious, political, military, that the Ayatollah is their religious leader, political leader, and military leader. And basically, you know, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad is a puppet obeying the Ayatollah. But nevertheless, after oil was discovered in 1938 in Saudi Arabia, which was the most violent of the Muslim religions, it was Wahhabi. The Wahhabi Islam started in the 1740s. There was a imam, Muhammad ibn al-Wahhab, and he said, look, we've backslidden from trying to conquer the world and bring it into submission to Allah, and we've become too nice with the West. 1740 wasn't too long after 1683, which was the defeat at the Battle of Vienna. The Muslims had been conquering Europe city after city, Bulgaria, Albania, Romania, Hungary, Poland, and they came up to Austria, and they were stopped at the Battle of Vienna in 1683. And so that was like the high water mark. That was like the Gettysburg for the Confederacy. And so after the Battle of Vienna, the Ottoman Empire gradually began to shrink. Well, in 1740, this imam in Arabia, Wahhab, said that we need to get more aggressive. We need to physically, militarily take over the West and fight. And he had this little band of raiders, and they would raid one city in Arabia and conquer it, and then raid another city in Arabia and conquer it. And they were really backwards and brutal. But the rest of the Muslim world sort of looked down on them. And Egypt viewed itself as the high-class, advanced, superior Muslim culture. And they looked down its nose at Saudi Arabia as a bunch of, you know, sort of backwoods, you know, hillbilly mountain raiders, you know, like a Confederate vigilantes and so forth. But anyway, after 1938, the West began to pump billions of dollars into the most violent of the Muslim countries. And within one generation, Arabia went from the poorest to the richest Muslim country. And so all the rest of these Muslim nations, instead of trying to westernize themselves to get advanced and financially, you know, blessed, they said, hey, wait a second, we want to be blessed like Saudi Arabia, let's be more Wahhabi. And Saudi Arabia became the in style, I mean, the women's dress. And so they would want jobs. And so instead of trying to send their kids to the West to get jobs, they'd send their kids to Saudi Arabia. And all the young up-and-coming people would go to Saudi Arabia. Well, if they went there, then they had to abide by the Sharia law. So then they'd go back to their countries and they'd say, hey, this is the new, you know, if you want to be wealthy, you got to dress like this. And so we actually provided the magnet by giving our money to the most violent Muslim country to cause the rest of the Muslim world to gravitate to being more violent Wahhabi Islam. So Saudi Arabia today is the number one publisher of Islamic textbooks. So most of the textbooks in America. And just a couple years ago, and I quote this in my book, the title of my book is What Every American Needs to Know About the Quran, but I quote the Washington Post in 2005 had an article where they took textbooks that were in America from the Muslim schools, translated them from Arabic into English, and they said things like true religion means that you hate the infidel, that it's forbidden to be a loyal friend of a non-Muslim. Then it goes on to say that Jews are apes and Christians are pigs. This is what it teaches in the textbooks. It dehumanizes the Christians and Jews, so it's easier to kill them when you think, oh, they're apes and pigs, and this is what they're taught.
Well, now, where are these textbooks being utilized?
They're utilized in America, in England. The English news just about 2 years ago interviewed the head of the school in London, and said, you're using these textbooks that call Jews apes and pigs. And they go, well, yes, this is the common textbook and this and that and this and that. They didn't deny it. It was there. And so the new school in New York, the Cahil Gibran School, they teach in Arabic in the school. And it's a public school that's paid for at taxpayer expense, but they're teaching this. And so we're financing the spread of Wahhabi Islam.
And we're financing this whole thing, ladies and gentlemen. We're financing it. Be back in just a moment.
What would your life be like if you woke up each morning with new vitality, feeling better than you have in years, and you noticed a difference in your sleeping patterns, blood sugar levels, and had a sense of well-being overall? There's something that is changing thousands of people's lives, and you could be one of them. It's called Heart and Body Extract. Sharon Harris, co-creator of Heart and Body Extract, talks about the positive effects of Heart and Body Extract.
What happens with the formula Heart and Body Extract is it's giving the body the necessary vitamins, minerals, amino acids, enzymes, and phytonutrients so the body will heal itself. And yes, the body does have the ability to balance blood pressure, balance cholesterol, clean and unclog the arteries. It can also work on balancing the circulation for diabetics. So the body is an amazing thing. It simply needs some help so it has the tools to heal itself.
Heart and Body Extract gets results. To order your 2-month supply, call now, toll free at 866-295-5305. Order online at hbextract.com.
11 years ago, when my uncle started the Patriot Trading Group, gas was 75 cents a gallon. We were running an alleged budget surplus, and the total national debt was $5 trillion, and the government was forecasting the debt would be eliminated by 2010. And I thought my uncle was a wacko with tinfoil on his head. Well, I owned tech stocks certain to become a millionaire before the millennium rolled over. Since then, the debt has doubled, jobs are heading overseas, and 100,000 people have joined Eric with tinfoil on their heads. I'm Joe Jaquin, Vice President for the Patriot Trading Group, and as gold and silver have doubled and even tripled during the first 11 years, the issues facing this country over the next 11 years look far worse. Call the Patriot Trading Group at 800-951-0592. We offer all forms of gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, shipped and delivered at the most competitive prices in the country. Call us, 800-951-0592, or check out our website at allamericangold.com. And remember, you don't need to have tinfoil to own gold and silver.
Well, Dr. Stan, back here at the American Freedom Network, our guest this morning, William Federer, and William was just talking about how these Arabic textbooks are being used here in the United States, but that's nowhere near as bad as the fact that anybody who wants to verify this would be glad to send them an article that we have out of the Washington Post. And we can verify this elsewhere, that the USAID, United States Agency for International Development, paid for with your tax money, had spent $51 million back in the late 1990s of actually providing textbooks in Arabic to be used in Muslim schools, pushing this radical form of Islam. Now, why would anybody, in their right mind in the United States government be encouraging the resurgence of this radical form of Islam? That just doesn't make sense. The article, Washington Post, when an enemy becomes, pardon me, the ABCs of jihad, and your tax money was used to finance the resurgence of Islam. Gee, that just doesn't make sense. Why would logical people do that? Because we're not dealing with logical people. Go right ahead, William.
Well, you're bringing up a very important point, Dr. Sanders. Why is the West basically committing suicide when we have a 1,400-year example, a track record of conquest of the West? Europe will, in 20 years, be like Turkey. People forget Turkey was the most Christian country in the world. Turkey used to be the Byzantine Empire. This is where Ephesus, Galatia, Colossae, all these New Testament churches were. Turkey used to be where all seven churches mentioned in the book of Revelation were. Philadelphia and Sardis and Thyatira and Laodicea. Turkey was where John spoke and Paul spoke and Antioch and where Mary, the mother of Jesus, where she lived. And during the Roman persecutions, they had caves around the areas around the Black Sea where 60,000 Christians lived in these caves to avoid from being killed by the Romans. I mean, this was a thousand-year of Christian history, but there's no Christians there today. Well, what happened? Well, very interesting little... remember I talked to you about how the West, when it's in disagreement, after the Fourth Crusade, when the Venetians conquered Constantinople, they held it for 57 years, raped and pillaged, took all the gold from their churches and all the relics and... robbed and stealed, but they also outsourced. They outsourced all the business to Italy, to Venice. That's when Venice began to grow. Matter of fact, so many of the Greek Byzantine scholars fled during this time. They fled to Italy. They fled to Florence. They took with them their Greek New Testaments, which basically started the Reformation, when they would translate the Bible not just to Latin but back to Greek. They introduced Greek architecture and Greek literature and Greek sculpture. And so in the middle 1400s, all these Italians are getting fascinated with Greek stuff. Why? Because the Greeks were fleeing the Muslim invasion. So that's why the Renaissance started. And, of course, I bring out in my book, and the title of my book is What Every American Needs to Know About the Quran. But in 1453 is when the Muslims conquered Constantinople, and that's when cut off the land routes to India. And so that's when Columbus said, I know a sea route to India, sail west. But when we examine this, the outsourcing that took place, they moved all the business to Italy. When the Byzantines finally drove the Venetians out, they had to try to rebuild their country. And now they didn't have any money saved up. And so they had to raise taxes. And then the Muslim invasion began to increase. And so now they had to tax their populace that was already stressed out. And the Muslims came and said, look, if you'll side with us instead of the Byzantines, we won't tax you. And so these Byzantine little villages would say, well, okay, sure. And so they would actually side with the Muslims. And once the Muslims took over, they came back into the village and says, okay, now that we're in charge, not only pay taxes, but we want your children, your boys. They called it the Dev Shurma, the blood tax. They would take a tax of the boys from 7 to 14 years old, take them away from their families, treat them like dogs in the Muslim families until they became psychologically traumatized, and then they would put them into the Muslim military. And they were called janissaries, and they would use them as fodder to attack the next Christian city, because they didn't care if they got killed or not, because they were these infidels that they had captured. And they had to look to the Sultan as their father, and the janissaries for 400 years were the most fiercest troops in Europe. Where the Muslims would fight and go home and enjoy their booty, these janissaries had to go back to, they were like the Praetorian Guard. They were like just surrounding the Sultan there. And so what happened was, is that how did the Muslims take over? Well, at first they promised, like when they conquered Egypt, they first promised to drive the Byzantine Christians out, and then they turned around and said, oh, we're going to take over. And so they promised these people, well, you don't have to pay taxes if you side with us. And then once they did, sort of like the Romans, when Herod the Great asked the Roman legions to come into Israel to verify his claim to being the king, and Herod the Great brings in these Romans, and the Romans support Herod, but after a generation, the Romans decide to take over, and they become an occupying force. And so that's what has happened in the West. And so right now we have one party or one political agenda in America that is fighting another political agenda, and the one says, you know, we'll side with these Muslims against these Judeo-Christian ones. So we have this unholy alliance taking place in America. We have the radical homosexual atheist agenda siding together with the radical Muslim agenda. You see, in strict Islamic countries, they prohibit public Judeo-Christian expression, and the ACLU and the homosexual agenda in America wants to prohibit public Judeo-Christian expression. So we see this unholy alliance taking place, and it's the secular homosexual agenda is very focused on one thing only, and that is tearing down Judeo-Christian values so they can have their free sex without having their conscience being bothered by these annoying Christians. They don't realize that after they've torn down everything Judeo-Christian, they're going to wake up and realize they just tore down their best wall of defense against radical Islam. And they're ignoring the fact that Islam is in itself a political party, and it has an agenda to take over. And, you know, once we become secular, you know, John Lennon wrote that theme song for the New World Order, Imagine. Imagine there's no heaven, it's easy if you try. Then there's a line in there that says, nothing to kill and die for, no religion too.
Hey, we're out of time, Bill. Thank you so very much. The book, once again, the title?
It's What Every American Needs to Know About the Quran, a history of Islam in the United States.
Bye-bye.
heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your two-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
Just a good old boy.
Hi, I'm Eric Cedarstrup. For over a decade, I've been the CEO, shipping clerk, and janitor of the Patriot Trading Group. And in that time, I've made friends with tens of thousands of like-minded individuals all over this country, most like me, trying to raise a family, run a business, and make sense out of a world gone mad. I'm proud of the fact that through stock bubbles, housing bubbles, and financial chaos, our customers are prospering and doing very well. By keeping our prices fair and our service fast, we find that 80% of our customers not only reorder, but they tell their friends. Don't be fooled by hype and high pressure. Do business with a company you can trust. Call the Patriot Trading Group at 1-800-951-0592 or check out our website at allamericangold.com. You'll be treated with honesty and respect. You have my word on it. I'm Eric Cedarstrom, CEO, shipping clerk, and janitor.
Making your way the only way they know how.
Well, Dr. Stan, back here at the American Freedom Network, we do carry the book, What Every American Should Know About the Koran, and it's available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. We also have a great four-tape set, and I think it's called A Religion of Doom, and it goes into the background of the Muslim faith, which is really a satanic faith. And basically, Muhammad really felt that he was demonically possessed, and simply goes through the Quran, all the reference to the fact that this is truly a satanic religion. The average Muslim doesn't understand that, but this is what it's about. And so this is a four-tape set, very good. We certainly recommend it. We carry another couple of books on Islam, about, of course, the one we'd suggest, What Every American Should Know About the Quran. But if you'd like to go to our website at RadioLiberty.com, we do carry a book by Lester Summerall and then several other books which we think are vitally important for you to know about. You need to know what we're up against, and then if you would like a copy of that article out of the Washington Post, The ABCs of Jihad, going into the background of the fact that we financed this whole radical Muslim movement. We bought the radicals to power over there in Iran when we toppled the Shah. And this is part of a long-range plan that is going, I fear, to bring us into World War III. Because, you see, there really is a movement out there. In fact, we've been doing everything we could, actually, to get nuclear weapons to Pakistan, and that's covered in my January 2008 letter, which seems, well, that's, why would we want to get nuclear weapons to Pakistan? That doesn't make sense. But that's the Sybil Edmonds story, the story you were not to hear, and all of the federal courts, including the United States Supreme Court, said we couldn't let the American people know that the American State Department was facilitating the transfer of nuclear technology to Pakistan. Why would a rational country do that? Well, because we're not dealing with rational people. We're dealing with people who have a different agenda, because I believe they worship a different God. Under any circumstances, if you'd like that article, when in the ABCs of Jihad, you have to specifically request it. If you get some of the other items we carry, why, of course, you'll want to have, we'll be glad to send that along. We hope you'll want to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, which will explain the spiritual nature of the forces behind what's going on. You can get a DVD of my talk, The Forbidden Secret, and you need to get the syllabus that goes with that. You can get my talk on the planned police state, and the syllabus goes with that. If you want to understand what is happening financially, and then, of course, what you must do, because believe me, the dollar is going to collapse. There was an article I was reading just today by a British economist talking about how the dollar is going to collapse as countries throughout the world pull their money out of this country. Why? Well, because everything they're doing is simply to destroy the value of the dollar. They're talking about spending another $800 billion on financial stimulus. The Fed is going to spend $500 billion, buying up these mortgage contracts. Of course, they're not.